Chapter 2 Dark Forest. One of the passing branches poked through the thong and yanked at it. It jerked his arm backward, bonelessly, and dug into the thinness where the thumb joined the wrist. It stopped him in his tracks, and he paused to study it in the darkness. Still intact, soft, dull ache in the limb as if a cane had wrapped the bone. He pulled at it gently, then firmly. Then he gave it a few yanks and knotted. He sighed and lowered his hand and listened to the dark forest all around him. He was fleeing. Trees leaned down the slope toward him, frozen in a silent fall. He looked at them. I think he must have felt as though the whole world was upon him like those trees, coming down on his head impossibly slow because all things of such scale must move slowly. And I think that as he stood there on the slope of that dark forest with the giants of his clan somewhere behind him, coming ever nearer, Udo must have felt that the trees intended to cast him back to the valley floor and the plains beyond it where he once lived. It was midday, as far as he knew, but despite Luch's brightness shining upon the cavern, it might as well have been sundark. He was oppressed by a gray murk that clung to the skin. The trees, black and jagged edges that kinked and twisted overhead, entangled. Looking up to the canopy, Udo thought it might be that the forest breathed with a single mouth. It suffocated him. He couldn't see more than a few fusa in any direction. Troigid, he reminded himself. In this world, the word is Troigid. But he knew that behind him was the drop of the slope. That was the place from which he'd come. That was the place from which he'd seen the forest, when it looked green and alive and wonderful. Now he was in it, and he thought that climbing to the top of the slope might return him to the warmth of the sun god. He leaned against a trunk, the bark like sponge under his elbow, and dug into the soil. It accepted him. The grit and the small slime-ridden creatures that writhed through it, sickly sweet smell of rotting deadfall and decay, of animal leavings and dead animals gnawed upon from their soft bellies upward to the ribs and through the backbone. He sank into the clean filth of that departed place and climbed and struggled. He looked back along the way he'd come often, worried he was becoming lost. It helped little that all trees in all directions were the same dark creatures, knobby and twisted as dvergas. He stopped next to one and circled it, straining to see it from all directions, to remember its shape, its flavor. Then he put his back to it and climbed some more, feet slipping out from under him, catching himself on a hand or forearm, grabbing at roots to pull himself higher. The roots gave way sometimes, and there he'd be sliding backward, body as rigid as a drawn bow, fingers and toes gouging through the forest's skin until he slid to a stop, panting. Feel of wet grit packed beneath his nails. He lunged forward and wrapped his arms around one of the narrower trunks, climbed it until his feet were under him. He looked back down the hill. He couldn't have made it more than a few paces higher, certainly no more than 10, but the tree he'd studied so carefully was nowhere to be seen, or everywhere to be seen. All around him, perhaps. Every tree a perfect copy of the next, separated only by their age. He supposed it might be so. That, or the trees were moving when he looked away. He wondered if a god would ever devise such a thing, a tree that could move. He couldn't think of a reason for them to do so, but his lack of imagination had hardly ever served as strong evidence in the past. He decided that up hadn't changed, even if the trees had, and continued on. Slowly, he continued. Several paces further, and his foot hit a patch of moss that had spread along the ground from the base of a tree trunk. He felt his legs slew under him, and he froze, hoping that going rigid might somehow arrest the slide, but he knew it wouldn't. Like a watchtower leaning, then slowly collapsing to the ground, Udo fell upon his elbows, stiff-backed, as if his greatest concern was to keep his middle out of the muck, and came to rest. He breathed heavily, staring into the soil. He thought about rolling over onto his back and looking up to high country. Maybe if I just do that, he thought, I'll be able to see through the tree cover to some kind of light. Perhaps I can simply look up and see the light, and even if I can't feel it upon me, maybe seeing would be enough. But he knew it was no good, even as he thought of pressing his back into the wet ground and giving in. He thought it would have been nice to give in, but for whatever reason, giving in was not yet a choice. He felt like he had further to go, more to do. There was a pulling insistence coming from somewhere, somewhere around the top of that hill, and he thought that pull might be a promise. Maybe somewhere up there, beyond the trees and the scum and the darkness and the rot, beyond all of the things screaming that he should go back, maybe beyond it all was a promise. He wondered for a moment what that promise might be. He understood less than half of the things he felt anymore. I think all he really understood was that the more he considered the things he felt, the less he felt them. And that realization alone was enough to make him run. He took a breath and planted his knee. Then he reached out with his hand and dug into the soil and found the sharp edge of a rock that would not give and grasped around it and pulled. He felt himself coming forward gently, felt his knee dragging a furrow through the dead leaves, and felt the rock urging toward him, trying to suck its way out of the sludge that held it. His lips split around his teeth, sudden shock of white, astonishing in such a shrouded place. "You bitch," he gasped. "You bitch. Hold, you bitch. Hold fast, you cunting fucking bitch." Then his knee found a depression in the soil that would not reject it. He transferred his weight to this place through the hip and thrust further, and he felt himself advance further up, securely. He knew, in the impossible way all humans know, that the things to which he clung would hold him. As long as he was careful and did not demand too much, the world underneath him would hold. Udo rested his head against his wrist, closed his eyes, swallowed, and gasped for air. He saw the track when he looked up again. A lifetime of surviving on the edges of society had taught him to see the passage of life through the wilderness, especially signs of dangerous life. He'd never seen a track like the one before him in his life, but he knew it was dangerous at least. Whatever had left it was dangerous. The depression was easily as big as a full-grown bear, but the shape was all wrong. Bear tracks had 5 toes like that of a man, and most times you could see the claws if the print was clean. This track had only 4 toes, almost like a dog, but it was far too wide. He put his hand down next to it and saw they were nearly the same size. Nearly. The track was larger around than his splayed fingers. He thought of the size a dog would have to be to lay such a track, if a dog was truly what had left it, and decided the animal would be large enough for a saddle. He wanted to reject what he was seeing, to insist that his eyes saw things that were not there in the low light, but then the men and women of that world were larger than they should have been as well. He'd not once seen a dog in that place, not since he came to stay there, less than a year ago. Had it been a year? He thought it might. But he knew it might have been shorter than a year as well. A year, give or take, then. And he'd not seen a dog the entire time. And a span of time approaching a year seemed enough to spot a dog. He thought if there had been dogs to see, he should have seen them by now. That track seemed to taunt him. He swiped some leaves over it, dug again into the ground, and heaved. He heaved all the way to his feet, pulled himself in front of a tree, and rested against it. "Fucking dogs," he whispered. Somewhere down the slope, he couldn't tell how far, something growled. The sound stuck his spine so profoundly to the trunk they might as well have been iron welded to iron, tree and man. Well, that was no fucking dog, he thought. The growl of a dog was a halfway thing, a sound between man-sized and critter. It rattled highly, as if strong lungs lived within a chamber too small to give them real weight. He'd heard it before in the back alleys, the warning of some flea-bitten, starving creature that wished only to be left alone in whatever dark hole it had climbed into. In most cases, the growl of a dog was no cause for alarm. Several dogs, yes, but not one. The growl that came from the bottom of the slope alarmed him so that he could not move. It reminded him of great stones grinding together, sending tremors through the ground. It sounded to him like seeking, as if the creature who'd made it knew he was there and wanted to find him. For a moment, he thought of the fields of Walhaz, how men had often shit themselves in the heat of battle. At first, he'd believed it was cowardice, that the men were so undone by the things happening around them that their bodies simply let go. This was early in the campaign. He assumed later that the occurrence was simply a part of campaign life. Men traveling in such numbers sometimes were afflicted with the quick step, and when the fighting started, there was little else to do but let it out. The mess could always be dealt with later if you survived, and if you didn't survive, it wouldn't bother you anyway. He was thinking about that feeling, that sour, watery churn of gut, when the growl came again, perhaps closer now. Udo breathed deeply, braced, and launched himself up the hill. He feared his legs would fly out from under him when he did, but for some reason, the exhilaration of his terror, perhaps, his feet drove holes where before they only skidded, and the trees were close enough that he could grasp their branches and pull himself forward. It was these things together, his hands sharing the burden when his feet kicked out, that kept him moving up the hill. A bit of terror, and the body forgot to tell him he was doing something difficult. Or maybe it was still sending him those signals, that he was about to topple every step, that he was about to bite through a mouthful of ground as he tumbled down toward the thing that had growled. He was too frightened to pay those warnings much attention, and so he loped up the hillside, slinging his body from tree to tree as if jumping rocks across a surging river. Soon his lungs burned with the coldness of the air, and he stopped to rest against a tree. He leaned his head back against it, panting, fighting to gasp as silently as he could, eyes closed, listening. He thought he could still hear the sounds of leaves and sticks and acorns and rocks skittering back down the hill, small things dislodged in his passage, gulping at the air like cold water, hating the air for the ripping burn it left in his chest, listening. The small, skittering sounds of the forest quieted, and all that was left was the breathing and the pounding. He cracked his eyes and looked again up the hill. It was different, brighter. Confused, he leaned forward as if to bring himself closer to the light, which was senseless. Any light he saw was far, far up toward the top of the hill, and the trees still held him. But it was there, he realized. Not a trick of the mind, not some wish his heart sent his eyes. Light. At the top of the hill, he thought he could see the trees thin, and in the open spaces left behind, there was the light of Luch, the sun god of that world. Udo looked up to that place, imagined the warmth of the light on his skin. His hands and feet were frozen in that dank place, and he wanted to strip down to his skin on the hilltop and let the warmth of the light reach all of him. He waited a moment longer, listening. No skittering, no growling. He heard the sigh of wind and the leaves that clawed its passage. He leaned forward and climbed again, carefully, picking his path with eyes wide open, fearing a tumble down the hill and the loss it meant, and perhaps fearing what might be down there searching for him. And he thought about the warmth of the light ahead. Soon he could think of nothing but the light of the hilltop, forgot to fear falling, He forgot to be afraid of anything as he climbed, and concerns for self fast dissolved in the need to stand out in the open, to stand under the glare of that God and be cleansed. It was not Sana, not his God, not in this world. But it was a God, and he reasoned that sometimes any God in particular would do. He thought the light of their God might be fierce enough to blister the flesh from his body, and as he fought to escape the darkness wrapped all around him like slithering weeds in a cold lake, he thought such a thing might be all right. He put his head down and did the things necessary to gain the hilltop, clawed over ground and trunk alike, conserving energy only by taking care not to lose ground, to always move forward, to always climb upward. His neck stretched out as though he was a testudine, crown of his bare head seeking toward the warmth he hoped was there. He wanted to look up many times, just to confirm he was headed in the right direction, or maybe to see if the thing he sought had not disappeared. He did not look. He had the idea that looking was somehow wrong. He thought that looking up to see the light might betray a lack of faith or humility, and that the light itself, which had no expectation of being doubted, would take insult at his failing spirit and leave him in the dark, alone. It became a torment for him, the desire and fear goading him equally. He clawed the slope all the harder. The climbing reminded him of the time he'd entered that world, Talam. There'd been a cave that passed between his world and the next, a cave like nothing he had ever seen. Almost a pipe wrought by a god, carved in a perfect circle and stretching away further than his eyes were willing to see. He'd floated through that place as if suspended in water. No need to walk, he only pushed off the walls to propel his body down the shaft, bouncing from surface to surface like a child's marble. Sometime later, hours or days he did not know, he came through a new door into a new world, a land far greener than his home, vibrant. The giants who lived there had called this place Koilamahther, and Udo had come to understand these words meant the trees within it. They were taller than any trees he'd ever seen, with trunks large enough around that the giants would sometimes carve their homes out of the centers of those that had died. Their leaves sparkled like emeralds in the light of Luch. The giants of the forest would make their homes there, he reminded himself, not the clans from the plains. He shook his head. These were thoughts he wished not to have. His mind went back to the advent of this world, when he climbed through the doorway and found yet another mountain spiraling out into the floor above, below, on all sides. The entire world before him was spinning, spinning so fast he could see the clouds being dragged to wisps above its passage. The place in which he resided, the hole at the mountain's center, was also spinning, though at a far slower rate. Remembering the handholds that had been carved into the mountainside, Udo searched until he saw one passing beneath him. He reached out, gloved his hand within it, and was tugged gently along. There Udo waited until the world ceased its turning. He hesitated, weightless, holding on to the mountain to keep it from turning. His body drifted like a blade of grass in a pond as he looked into the cloud well. They turn in the other direction here, he thought. Then he laughed as the tears blurred his vision, and he did not understand. He looked on the god throne of that world, felt its brightness. Then he began to climb toward the ground, a place he would soon have to think of as down, though moving toward it presently felt like up. Then, as he moved away from the center of the world, he felt his body pulled sidewise, gently at first, but stronger as he went. He realized the magic Irpisha had given him was releasing his body while this new world took hold, and felt as though he were a babe lowered from mother to cradle. In the dark forest, he thought of that gentle transition, the slow embrace of Talam as he descended her mountain, and wished it could be so again. He spat the dirt from his mouth and cursed the trees. Sometimes he grasped up a handful of ground and threw it down the slope out of spite. He wondered as he did if there were small insects caught up in the muck, if they'd been going about their day calmly, only to have it violated by being flung down the hill by some enraged man. He hoped there were. For a moment he paused and laid his belly into the ground and crossed his wrists and pillowed his head upon them. He breathed in the scent of the forest and rested. "Where are you running?" he asked. The leaves beneath his lips trembled. There was no answer. Then he sighed, nodded, and forgetting he was not to look to the hilltop, looked up toward the hilltop. A wolf stood above him, no more than a stone's toss away. It was a black thing, like the forest within which it lived. High-backed and sharp-shouldered, low head. Fur of its body sporadic with mange. The lips split back from the muzzle in a silent growl. It watched him, unmoving, and salivated runnels into the dirt. Udo forgot his problems. For a moment he stared at the wolf and thought to himself, "You idiot. You've called Lugo through your lack of faith. He'll gnaw your entrails while you yet live for such insult." The animal looked upon him with yellowed, hateful eyes. Hands now shaking, Udo began to push backward into the soil, sliding rigidly away. The wolf noticed this, tossed its head, and turned side-on to Udo as if to view the rest of his body. For a moment, the mouth closed, but soon after pulled back into a jumble of gleaming fangs. When it turned to the side, he saw that it was a she-wolf, breasts low with milk even as her ribs slid beneath membranous skin. She appeared to be starving, and Udo realized she might be looking at him as more than a meal. She might be considering the milk his body would yield up to her litter. He realized that she could very well be worse than the old fire god come to exact a toll in flesh. "All right," he whispered. Then he rolled to his back, sat up, and threw himself down the hill. Then, tumbling over and over, down and down the hill as he picked up speed. I recalled at least two trees, off of which he glanced, angry red lines swept along the length of a flank, as if he'd been assaulted by a painter with a giant brush. He thought nothing of the ground given up to the wolf, thought of nothing more than tumbling away from the trees in that spinning world. And as he watched it spin around him, he remembered grasping the mountain to keep it still. He thought of the animal track he'd found. It was impossible that the wolf had made it. The track was far too large. And wondered if he fell from the certainty of one death into the mouth of another. He noticed a smaller tree, the trunk was perhaps as thick as his thigh, amidst a somersault through the air. He saw mostly ground, trees, as he tumbled, but that one in particular stood out, and he realized it came nearer with each turn. Having been reduced only to instinct, he stuck out an arm to catch it, not thinking about what might happen on impact. Arm and tree collided, he perceived a thud deep within his skull, and his body spun out in a flat arc over the dirt floor like a flung dinner plate. One heartbeat, an eternity within his mind, where he was weightless again, looking quietly up to high country. Then his back bit deep into the soil, and he slid the last few meters to a stop at the bottom of the hill. He lay in the dirt, panting, staring at the tree canopy overhead. He'd left the light far behind at the top of the hill. All was low darkness around him. His right shoulder was suddenly alive in an ice-blue misery, making his eyes water. Breath came in short gasps as he tried to move the joint. Swells of agony pulsated into his core from the wounded area, and sweat beaded instantly upon his skin. Moaning, he lifted to a seated position, waited a moment, breathed deeply, and looked down at the arm. It lay beside him, flat in the dirt like a dead snake. He sighed and shook his head. With his left hand, he set to work separating the laces of his shirt. It took far longer than he would have liked. The laces were of leather thong, their knots were tightly drawn, and his left was not the preferred hand. When he finally had them all untied, he lay back down upon the forest floor and just waited a moment, just lay there in the soil and breathed, and tried not to focus on the pain of his shoulder, which was tremendous, but nothing compared to the feeling of his arm's weight hanging against his body. "Just a moment," he panted. "Just a moment, and I'll be on my feet, good as I was." He waited, and then a moment later thought of the wolf and called out, "Are you still up there, Lugo? Are you coming for me soon? Well, if you are, do me a favor and start at this shoulder. It pains like a son of a bitch." The wolf did not come. The only sound was of the leaves clawing at the wind and of his breath clawing through his throat. He waited a moment longer just to be certain and then muttered, "Never around when you want them." He closed his eyes, shook his head, and said, "Well, fuck you then. May you fucking starve." He breathed deeply, held it, and snarled his way back to a seated position. Then he slumped over, paused, and as a thin runner of drool drew a silver line to his lap, he grunted, "Your sister's cunt." He took his right hand and gently fed it into his opened shirt collar, pausing each time the pain flared. Soon enough, the dead appendage was couched up against his belly, and he began looping the laces around the wrist to tie the arm in place. He imagined how it would feel if the arm slipped out as he was walking and went weak through the legs. He had to fight the laces a while. I could not say for how long, but he was sure he must have struggled with them for at least an hour. All considered, 5 to 10 minutes is probably a fair estimate. When he was done, he stood and looked up the slope. He saw drag marks in the soil, patches of bare leaf or twig where his body had swept them away. The wolf was gone. "As if he were never there," he sighed. "Fine. Let it never be said that Udo can't take a fucking hint." He turned to skirt the edge of the hill, searching out a path that would lead him around, rather than over.